This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Callie Crossley. Fans of the HBO series Girls might remember this from the very first episode of the show.
All I am asking for is $1,100 a month for the next 2 years.
That's insane. Of course, it's a little tongue-in-cheek, but news out today might make you a little more sympathetic. Average student loan debt for new college grads is $26,600 and climbing. Add in a tough job market and high unemployment, and prospects for 20-somethings seem bleak. Laura Bennett, writer for The New Republic, a 20-something herself, noticed people her age were doing something different to cope with the uncertainty. She wrote about it in a new piece called Generation Wine, Self-Pitying 20-somethings and the Boomers Who Made Them. She joins us today to talk about her piece. Laura Bennett, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, what you noticed as you were writing your piece on blogs, Twitter, Tumblr sites, were 20-somethings kind of complaining in a similar way. What did you see, and what made you think it was a phenomenon to be noted? And please, no profane calling of the names of some of those sites.
Oh, I'll restrain myself.
Okay.
So basically, what spurred me to write this piece was kind of double-pronged. The first was looking out at the cultural landscape and realizing that we're seeing a lot of representations of 20-somethings right now. It seems like they're everywhere. HBO's Girls is a good example, and they're on a few pretty prominent Tumblrs and blogs that have picked up a lot of mainstream cultural attention, that have gotten, you know, written up in places like The Times, but that the representation of the 20-something is weirdly single-minded. So everywhere you look, you see this sort of angsty, aspiring creative, newly ejected from the liberal arts bubble in the throes of existential anxiety. And I wondered why this representation was all we were seeing. And the other thing that spurred me was kind of general exhaustion with the bad rap that my generation is getting. Narcissism epidemic, Generation Me. And I wanted to try to trace that representation to its roots.
So give us an example of some of, you know, what might be written on these sites.
So the two sites that I profiled most, you know, extensively in my piece were one group blog called Thought Catalog, which was founded in 2010 and has an office in Brooklyn, and a Tumblr called fiminmy20s.tumblr.com. And Thought Catalog is basically a collection of rueful meditations on the 20-something experience. The posts have titles like How You Know You're a 20-something or Five Things You Do When You're a 20-something. And the other Tumblr, which is written by a girl named Emma Koenig, who's a 20-something herself, similarly has kind of the same kinds of formulations, like how you know when you're a 20-something. So I noticed that you was sort of the organizing, you know, principle of these kinds of sites, that there was this comfortable presumption of consensus. And so in my article, I called this new worldview of this set of millennials a kind of you-ism, which is a tendency to take your own worldview and project it outward, to take a narrow slice of life and universalize it. And I think that's, you know, that's something that social media kind of encourages.
So, as we've noted, Laura Bennett, you are in your 20s, but yet...
I am.
But yet, what of the kinds of writings, musings that you saw beginning to be a phenomenon or are a phenomenon at this point struck you as whining? So, why did you see it as whining? Because, as we've also said, there is a high rate of unemployment.
Absolutely.
Lots of folks living at home now that hadn't planned to.
No, certainly. And then the student debt number that you said at the beginning of the segment is really important. There's a great book from 2006 called Generation Debt that basically, you know, diagnoses student debt as one of the genuine defining features of the 20-something experience right now, and that's absolutely legitimate. The first thing I should say is that Generation Wine as a title is a little bit tongue-in-cheek. Poking fun at the idea of characterizing a whole generation based on a few Tumblrs and blogs. But what you see in a lot of these blogs is I called it in my piece a sort of pseudo-survivalism, like conflating the specific difficulty of, say, breaking into the culture industry with hardship in the economy at large. And also, there's a sociological theory that undergirds a lot of these cultural representations, and it's called emerging adulthood. And it was coined by a psychologist named Jeffrey Arnett in 2004. And he basically posits that it's a new universal life stage that's arisen in developed countries over the past half century. And it's characterized by in-betweenness, by, you know, paralyzing uncertainty, by a sense of possibilities, and also the search for something he calls identity-based work. It's the idea that all 20-somethings are just fervently in search of work that maximally uses their particular skills and talents. And obviously not everyone has the luxury of searching for identity-based work. But this is something that comes up in a lot of these Tumblrs and blogs, sort of the anxiety of how will I find work that suits me, that is me, that is my identity.
I find his work very interesting because it takes what you have posited as just navel-gazing to something else that actually is scientifically documented. Let's get some other voices in this conversation. I'm speaking with Laura Bennett. She's a writer for The New Republic. Her new piece is called Generation Wine, Self-Pitying 20-somethings and the Boomers Who Made Them. And 20-somethings, we want to hear from you. Did you leave school and find yourself adrift? Move back in with your parents? Did you start a blog? Are you waiting for the perfect job to come along? And parents, we want to hear from you, too. Does this sound like your kid? Give us a call at 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. You can tweet us at Boss Public Radio or share your story at facebook.com/Boston Public Radio. So a couple of things about what you mentioned with the scientist Jeffrey Arnett. As he has begun to look at this transitional period, which really happens in the 20s, calling it emerging adulthood, he notes that in the past, I guess Greatest Generation and the generation after that, the kind of factors that were used to move people along into adulthood, that leaving home, that becoming financially independent, that marriage, first job and child, is significantly delayed by extenuating circumstances and cultural changes in America, where later to be married, later to be financially independent because it's tough out here and it's a bad economy, are happening in different ways to this group. And so it's shaped them in a different way so that now other factors may underscore their moving into adulthood or not, or being delayed.
Right. Mm. Right. Well, he specifically points to the rising median age of first marriage, as well as to the increasing premium placed on education in an information-based economy. So he says that the one claim he makes that has caused him to catch a little bit of flack and gotten some pushback from other sociologists and demographers, many of whom I spoke to, is the idea that this stage is universal. So it's a useful framework. It definitely exists. But to posit that all young people experience this, some young people have babies when they're 19 years old or go fight in wars overseas and then skip this period of in-betweenness. But he points to specific cultural and political and sort of social changes that spurred this. But the sort of Achilles heel of the theory, so to speak, is that it strives too much for the universal when it really refers to a specific demographic.
Well, let's get Patrick from Bedford, New Hampshire, in this conversation. Patrick, go ahead. You're on 89.7 WGBH.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Oh, you're welcome.
I'm calling just to tell you a different sort of story, I suppose. I went to school for regular, fairly cheap cost, and I'm a junior now. And I feel like I'm a little bit different than the average 20-something-year-old because I never sort of had the intention of finding a dream job, so to speak. I just wanted to find a way to learn more about things that were in my zone of interest. And my plan is to get out and work full-time as a laborer, which is what I did, my way through school as well. I don't really have any sort of sense of self-pity or feelings as though I deserve a job that falls within my categories of interest, because I just don't feel like market can offer us much right now.
So do you think the rest of your as the scientists would say, cohort, those who are have taken to social media to say, what happened here? I should be getting this. Are they whiners, in your opinion?
A little bit. I think that every situation is different. So there are some people who may have been promised things and were let down. And in that case, you know, well, maybe they have a reason to complain. But I don't think that what used to be true is true anymore. I don't think that a college education necessarily guarantees that you will be employed in the professional world. You might end up, you know, with the rest of the guys working for an hourly wage, and people can survive that way. So I think, you know, that more of us just need to realize that that sort of lifestyle is okay, in spite of how smart you are, how well educated you are.
Thank you so much for the call, Patrick. Laura, what do you think about that?
Oh, I think that's a really, really mature outlook. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, it's tough to pass judgment on how any 120-something deals with these kinds of existential anxieties. But I think the more this interesting observation I was trying to make in my piece was that the only cultural representations of the 20-somethings are not people like Patrick. Mm-hmm. They're not people who have sort of resigned themselves to a changing economy and a new landscape. There are people who are saying, who are in my opinion, in my analysis, kind of conflating, you know, the difficulty of getting by with the difficulty of finding artistic fulfillment.
Mm-hmm.
And something else I pointed to in my piece is the role of the boomers are playing all,
well,
in
exactly.
all of this.
They're the big elephant in the room.
Right, exactly.
let's get back to them after we hear from Mike from Portsmouth. Go ahead, Mike. You're on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on that feeling of in-betweenness. I'm 28. I went to college, graduated, had some debt, paid it off. But after I had finished college, I moved back home, and I thought it felt like it was going to be an in-between state that I wasn't crazy about being there. Mm-hmm. But over time, I've been able to sort of create employment for myself. I'm sort of a freelance musician, and I've become really comfortable with the idea of being in this area and having a community and kind of being near my family, even though that's probably not the 20-something ideal. So it sort of changed just how I perceived my life path going.
Was that your 20-something ideal? Was it your 20-something ideal?
You know, yeah, because it wasn't, but it turned into it. Mm-hmm. I'm happy with it.
Okay. All right. Thanks so much for the call, Mike.
Sure. Thank you.
Here's what we know, that 40% of 20-somethings move back home. Now, I don't know if everybody's as comfortable as Mike is or maybe they've made peace with being at home, but it is true that 40%, and that's a lot of people, move back home, 20-somethings. A third of them move to a new residence every year. Oh, my goodness, that's a lot of people. And most 20-somethings will have 7 jobs in their 20-something time period of their lives. I think that, you know, right now, even for people older than 20-something, they're expecting to have more than the usual one job of the greatest generation, even two of something because of the economy, and also just the changing business scenario. Wouldn't you agree, Laura? So maybe the 7 jobs isn't really not that.
Right. Well, I mean, there are a lot of statistics you can point to. One thing that I found interesting in my research is that, you know, the high school students who graduated in 2011, slightly less than 70% enrolled in college, and only about 15% of those students went to relatively select college and universities. It's like flagship state schools, or I think schools that have an acceptance rate of something less than 30%. But so, you know, that was a revelation for me to realize that the experience of, you know, emerging from school, that, you know, that's in a feeling like you're armed with this degree and that, you know, what does it really mean? And that's a specific reality also. And also the idea that, okay, the unemployment rate for 20 to 24-year-olds is 13.9%. But, you know, if you break it down by, say, for white 20 to 24-year-olds, it's 11.5%. For black youth, it's 24.9%. Those kinds of statistics weren't showing up anywhere in my experience.
So what do you think is the impact of having the voice of your generation, or the voice of 20-somethings, be the people who are A, not among the 24.9%, are folks who have graduated from elite colleges, only 15% in the larger group, and are not the one in five who don't have a high school diploma?
Well, I think that the impact is, you know, the appearance of a consuming generational narcissism that, you know, the idea of whininess, the idea of people who, 20-somethings who are doing nothing but, you know, complaining about the specific situation they're in, and that obviously in large part are the cultural representations of our generation help to shape the way our generation's legacy and what it comes to represent. And if you look at, I mean, it's interesting to see, okay, so we're construed as the narcissism generation, is Generation Me, Generation X was sort of happy slackerism, and then the boomers was individualistic idealism, back to the silent generation, kind of grave pragmatism. These kind of wraps that generations got along the way were more shaped, in my opinion, by certain kinds of political and social factors than even ours is. The bad rap we're getting in large part has to do with this, you know, self-affirming echo chamber of social media and the way that it seems like 20-somethings do nothing but talk about themselves a lot of the time.
Hmm. Sarah from Boston, go ahead, please. You're on Boston Public Radio, 89.7.
Hey there. Okay, so I'm 40-something, a few years out. My mama always told me life is neither fair nor easy. I have worked all my life. Most of it as an independent. I never expected to get into school unless my grades were good. I never expected to get a job unless I did a good job. I wasn't, you know, I didn't think anybody was going to hand anything to me, and they still don't. Why is it that this generation, and I just heard the bit she talked about, the whole generation being narcissistic, and quite frankly, I agree with that. Why is it that anybody thinks that they are to be handed anything? This is a world where you have to work for what you do. You know, I'm sorry. That's just the way it is.
Well, Sarah, that's what a lot of people think. I'm going to get Laura to respond to that. I mean, that's the essence of her piece, too, was she was just excavating a lot of some of the response to that people are putting out in social media. So, Laura, respond to Sarah, please.
Well, that is an extreme view, and I certainly empathize. But to be honest, my piece was trying to do something a little bit that wasn't quite that. It was trying to kind of parse that exact representation, as I said, trace it to its roots and look at just how prevalent, just how widespread it is. So the kind of takeaway I came away with was, you know, why is this generation thought to be so whiny? Well, because, you know, the most vocal members of the generation are the ones getting all the airtime, and that there's this push from the culture at large to because they have a blog and they can, to let them sort of speak for a generation.
All right, Tricia from Mission Hill, go ahead, please. You're on Boston Public Radio, 89.7.
Hi, I'm a parent of a 23-something, and I want you to say, I just think we're to blame.
Mm. a lot of people think that, by the way.
Yes, thank you.
I really do believe that. You know, I'm one of nine. I'm from working class. I work since I was 12 years old. You know, that's just the kind of thing that he had to do, you know. And then so many of us had one or two kids, and I don't know what happened along the way, and maybe you can speak to that, and it became all about them, you know, so much focus on them, and I mean, I adore my daughter. She's a great young woman, but, you know, she's in New York, went to a great university, grad school, and she's waitressing, and I just find that we are to blame, and it's definitely demographic. We live in a neighborhood where it's a luxury for her to think about, you know, what you spoke of, wanting to have a job where she's creative and she, you know, has a personal identity. But I definitely think it's demographics, and I don't think everyone in the country has the luxury of that.
Thank you so much, Tricia, for your call and your comment. Laura Bennett, and let me remind everybody that you're a writer for The New Republic, and we're talking about your piece, Generation Wine, Self-Pitying 20-somethings and the Boomers Who Made Them. A lot of people believe that helicopter parents and beyond have created the narcissism in your generation.
Right. No, that's a great segue, so I appreciate that question. I mean, I've heard that complaint aired all over the place, that You know, the boomers' attachment to an outdated education system that's saddling students with debt. It's the helicopter parenting that's making young people feel entitled to things that, you know, generations before them didn't feel entitled to. And I think that you can, you know, blame the boomers in a certain sense, both in their capacity as parents and in their capacity as tastemakers at places like The Times and HBO and Simon & Schuster and wherever, because a lot of the 20-somethings behind these tumblers and blogs have been handed book deals. Emma Koenig behind FIMInMy20s.tumblr.com has a book that just came out, and that book has just been now being made into a TV show for NBC. There's a blog called Adulting that's also being made into a TV show, and that's about, you know, trying to be a grown-up. There's this show called 20 Nothings coming out that's also based on a blog about being a 20-something in Hollywood. So, and then all seeing all these, you know, profiles in, say, the Times tile section about these 20-somethings characterizing them in the same way as loafers, as, you know, hanging out in their parents' basement. So it's pretty interesting. One sociologist I talked to said he thinks that there must be an editor at the Times who has a 30-something kid with his feet up on the table, you know, eating Cheetos, can't get him out of the house, and that's why there are all these articles about, you know, generation.
And that was that's what I thought as I was reading your piece and reading these other pieces that, you know, go on and on about these people and what they're saying. And I thought to myself, these must be the children of the parents who shaped them in this way. And they're both, you know, enjoying it and repulsed by it. And you
right.
know, so they don't know quite what to do except to write about it and point it out
right.
as something that is more universal than it is.
Absolutely. I mean, this obsession with the plight of the aimless millennial is coming from, you know, very specific places, and a lot of the times it's coming from boomers. Actually, Jeffrey Arnett, the man behind Emerging Adulthood, has a book coming out in the spring, and he describes it as a parent's guide to emerging adults. So that encapsulates the idea pretty nicely.
Well, I have to say, this is, you know, one of the reasons why I detest girls. I just couldn't take it because I thought it was just so narrow in its perspective. On the other hand, as a person that really enjoys and wants to know people's stories, I'm sort
right.
of torn because, you know, you want to hear people tell their truth in how they tell it, and I think that's important.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I'm repulsed by it, so I guess I'm part of the problem, too. Go ahead.
I think it's interesting. I think a lot of people feel that way, and partly it's a problem of framing. A show like Girls is a very narrow reality, but what title could be more all-inclusive than Girls?
Mm.
And similarly, there's a book that's coming, or the book that's coming out, I think, in November. It's called 20-something, Why Do Young Adults Seem Stuck? That was part of what spurred me to write the piece also, because that's a really broad and really ambitious title. It wades through a lot of sociological and demographic data. But when it comes down to it, there's not a single voice in the book from below the poverty line. It's also about a really specific kind of 20-something experience.
Yeah, the privilege is reeking. And I have to say, I find that just really hard to take. It's just and what's hard to take about it is I don't begrudge people to have the privilege. I'd like them to acknowledge that they have it. They seem not to know, which is...
Right, I think a lot of people feel that way.
So I think it's hard to, like, engage with their experience because you're saying, you're screaming going, hello, would you acknowledge that you have the privilege, and then I can, you know, sort of go with you as you go, you know, let
right.
me know what you're feeling. But anyway.
Yes, and I think, you know, it's hard to criticize the specific bloggers at places like Thought Catalog or If I'm in My 20s, you know, who don't really have a responsibility to expand their frame of reference beyond their own worldview. You know, they're just writing one person's diary, so to speak. But, you know, it's the cultural pressures to let these people speak for a whole generation. You know, Lena Dunham just got a $3.5 million book deal. She is in large part a creature of the internet. I mean, she's has this enormous following that's built around her because she has so many, you know, people who chart her every move on Twitter. She's all over the web. And that's in part what sort of catapulted her to such prominence.
And we should say, for people who don't know, she is the
creator, producer
of Girls on HBO. And we should also note that the people who are actors on her series are the sons and daughters of very privileged folks out in the world in a variety of fields, including Brian Williams' daughter. That it would be Brian Williams, who is the NBC anchor. Let's take a call from... go ahead. I'll let you speak before I take Max's call.
No, that's fine. Sure. Yes, I mean, I'm sure they're all very nice people. So nothing, I'm not trying to particularly malign any of them, but I think that sort of the cultural framing of all of this is very interesting.
It is. Max from Concord, Massachusetts. Go ahead, please. You're on Boston Public Radio, 89.7.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
So just kind of wanted to make a point about stability.
Mm-hmm.
And first off, I'm a 24-year-old, graduated in 2011 from a liberal arts college. And I don't think that we can really expect stability in the current state of the economy and with the current state of politics, both here and, you know, across the pond in Europe. So I've been hearing a lot about identity-based work in this segment that you're doing. And all I can think is that identity-centered work would be great, but at some point I have to say that there are things that I want to do, but I have to do something. And you just have to jump at any opportunity that you see. So, I mean, I'm a graduate of a liberal arts school. I majored in graphic design and studio art. So not exactly the most conducive, major to get a job, but I went to as many events as I could while I was at college, and I managed to connect with an alumni who works in the publishing industry. And because of that, I've got a job as a production artist. And I mean, it's not exactly the most creative job, and I do want to do more creative things in the future, but for right now, I'm perfectly fine being a contractor, given the political economic environment.
Well,
I
take your point, Max, but Laura, I want you to weigh in here. Are you equating a stability with a kind of, because I understand what you're about going into adulthood. I think what the scientist has said, Jeffrey Arnett, and what Laura has referred to and much in her piece is whether or not there's some delayed adulthood. And in that delayed adulthood, are people expressing an angst about what they should be having at this point because they just are not mature enough yet. They just haven't gone through this transitional period. But I don't know if that's the same thing as stability, but I'm going to let Laura respond to that. Laura, you respond.
Sure. Well, I mean, it's hard to say. One thing I found interesting is that in talking to a lot of the sociologists and demographers in my piece, that the notion of identity-based work as, you know, the search for identity-based work as a feature of this 20-something experience is flawed and is sort of misleading because, I mean, one sociologist pointed to a 20-something she's worked with in a study on urban poverty she's doing who is working in a Coca-Cola bottling plant during the day, and his identity is totally apart from his work. The work has nothing to do. I mean, everyone, the search for identity is perennial, but his identity, work is completely separate from it, and in fact, it's totally wrapped up in this antique Lincoln he's been detailing, and that's, you know, that's what he's vested his whole self in. But, so, I mean, it's my personal opinion that it's useful in some, you know, in some ways to try to separate identity and work, but, you know, to each his own. It's just, it's really a factor of whether you have that privilege or you don't.
Hmm. Amy from Boston, you're on Boston Public Radio, 89.7.
Hi there, Callie.
Hi.
Hi. So I just wanted to make a general comment. I'm lucky enough to have employment right now, and I had previously finished a stint as a contractor. And what I've noticed with contractors is that, you know, that's the job that a lot of us millennials, I'm 23. I graduated from BU in 2011, and I honestly couldn't have been happier with my experience. And yet, you know, when I go out into the workforce and the jobs that I am qualified for, you know, there is no chance of me getting health care. There's very little chance of me getting advancement. Mm-hmm. And to be perfectly honest, a contractor is hired to fill a specific role and not to really grow as employees. And also, you know, my significant other has, you know, a significant amount of money in debt, well, about over four times the average. And he only started to be able to pay, you know, really his half of rent until earlier this year. Mm. And, but, you know, that's somebody who grew up in poverty and was able to really, you know, single mom, all this sort of stuff. And, you know, saw college as his opportunity to really rise up in the world, because he knows what it's like if you don't try to get the best education possible. And that's something that, you know, I was lucky enough to, you know, my parents prepared me for. And I feel like a lot of the kids that are going out, they're taking out this massive amount of money. You know, they're starting from, you know, negative $1,400 a month for some people.
Right.
And I think, you know, yes, there's a certain amount of entitlement and whining that's out there, but I think it would be really unfair to look at, you know, these people who, you know, have worked themselves up and have worked so hard that, you know, they don't get a fair chance to breathe that. And when the only opportunity that's available for them is the contractor job where they'll barely make $2,000 a month, when they have to pay, you know, over $1,000 in student debt, I think that's a hard pill to swallow.
Now, I get it, Amy. We have done untold numbers of stories about student loan debt on this show.
I've heard them all, and I appreciate you putting them out there.
Because it is really stopping people in their tracks. Talk about upending stability. That is a major factor, and it's really hitting all kinds of folks. And I don't think we've seen the full impact of the folks that you're talking about who can just now. Now, maybe, if they're lucky, have contract work to even pay back a piece of that. So we're not ignoring that. We're just looking at this phenomenon.
You know? I just wanted to put that out there.
Yeah.
Well, and I'd love to see a blog about that, actually.
Yeah, that would be. Wouldn't that be a little bit different, huh? Thank you so much for the call, Amy.
All right. Thank you. Have a nice day.
All right. So, Laura, in conclusion, Laura Bennett, what would you say we should look for in the next, I would say, next couple of years, as this cultural phenomenon of this admittedly narrow group of people who are influencers at this point talking about your generation? I mean, the people on the Thought Catalog were once just a little blog, and now they got a building. So, I mean, there's traction there in terms of people paying attention to the thoughts and feelings of folks who are writing there.
Absolutely. Well, my opinion is that we're going to start to see diminishing returns on these kinds of representations, that this cultural moment is really preoccupied with the plight of the aimless millennial, but this rash of TV shows and books coming out, you know, it all is kind of piggybacking on the success and sort of hubbub surrounding girls, and that it's going to it's going to sort of fall off. It can't go on. But I think in the next few months, over the next course of the year or so, as all these shows come to air and show up on TV, there's going to be a lot more conversation happening around the kinds of representations of the 20-something we're seeing.
Well, thank you for kicking off the conversation, and a vigorous one it was. I appreciate your being here today.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Kelly.
We've been talking with Laura Bennett. She's a writer for The New Republic, and you can find a link to her latest piece, Generation Wine, Self-Pitying 20-somethings and the Boomers Who Made Them, at our website, wgbhnews.org/BPR. What New England state has the second highest unemployment rate of any state in the nation? We'll find out as our 30 Issues in 30 Days coverage turns a spotlight on one of our neighbors and a group of civic leaders who are trying to turn things around there. I'm Callie Crossley, and you're listening to Boston Public Radio.